You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Ever aspiring veterinary student and legions of pet lovers all over the world have read the adventures of the British veterinary surgeon James Alf White, also commonly known as Dr. James Harriet. Where the Yorkshire Dales had Dr. Harriet, the Avonon Peninsula of Newfoundland, Canada, has Dr. Andrew Peacock. Dr. Peacock is a veterinarian who's had to do it all, from delivering calves in a blizzard, breakneck relocation efforts of caribou, dealing with bingo-playing polar bears, to trying to decipher the unique dialect of the locals. Dr. Peacock was extremely gracious and invited me into his home near Carbonear, Newfoundland, where he captivated me with tales from his upcoming book, Creatures of the Rock.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
Every pet is unique. Maybe they're gray in the muzzle, yet young at heart. Maybe they're growing out of the puppy stage and into their paws and ears. Or maybe they're just trying to maintain a more girlish figure. At PetSmart, we have the right food for your pet at a great value for you. PetSmart. Be better together.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on pawsome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and if you ever have the opportunity to go someplace that almost seems to be the ends of the world and is just amazing in its diversity and fabulous people, I would say go to Newfoundland, Canada. You don't know where it is? Go on your map. Take a look at it. Because right now I have the opportunity to be in the very gracious home of Dr. Andrew Peacock. He is a veterinarian who never really thought, I have a feeling, that he would have had the adventures in his career that he's presently had. Dr. Peacock, thank you so much for allowing me into your home and telling me some fabulous, fabulous stories.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's nice to have you here.
Tell me a little bit about your background first. Where did you grow up and where did you go to veterinary school?
I grew up in northern Ontario in a place called Kapuskasing, and I went to school at the University of Guelph in southern Ontario.
And your plans were to come to somewhere where some people would say is kind of in the middle of, I'm not really sure where we are, and it's a small rural community, freshwater.
Right.
And freshwater is near St. John's, Newfoundland. So if somebody looks on the map, they can find it. How did you come here?
My wife's a medical doctor, and the two of us were looking for really an adventure for a couple of years after vet school. And we thought we might try somewhere in the north. We looked at jobs in northern Ontario and northern Saskatchewan. And at that time, there was a lot of resistance to female medical doctors and trouble finding a job for her, believe it or not. We ended up with looking at Newfoundland, a place neither of us had ever been to before, and we thought we'd try that a couple of years, and here we are still here 30 years later.
And this home that you've allowed me into is just spectacular. It's overlooking a bay. You have a view that is breathtaking. And you offered me a drink in the beginning that had iceberg water in it. I mean, this iceberg ice, and it sings to you.
That's right. The iceberg ice, it surprised us the first time we got some of it. We got it going out in a kayak. The first time we got it, chopped a little bit off an iceberg that floated by our place. And the ice and the air trapped in it is very old. It's 600 years old or more. And it bubbles out as it melts in the water. It's quite interesting to hear.
So you're in this area, and I have a feeling you didn't do just a small animal practice. It was a mixed animal practice. But it wasn't just cats and dogs and horses and sheep. You've worked on a plethora of animals. What have been some of the things that you've worked on in your past?
Well, I guess the biggest one that I've worked on is I've done a bit of work with whales. I've done some work with blue whales. Humpback whales. And they come by here all the time. One of the things that used to happen with them when we had cod fishing here is whales would occasionally get caught in the nets, and I was involved in helping to get them out of the nets. The other thing that would happen with whales sometimes is they'd be caught inside the ice. And an interesting thing that came up with one of the whales we had caught in the ice is that we don't know much about these animals. And we look at them stuck in shallow water in the ice, and watching them and seeing what's going on with them, it became apparent that one of the real problems, it may seem trivial, is sunburn. So the thing that we were able to do with an animal like that was to put suntan lotion on the whale.
That's a lot of suntan lotion.
That's a lot of suntan lotion. We put it on with a mop.
I don't even want to know where you go to get gallons upon gallons of suntan lotion, but I don't think most people would have thought about it. Had the opportunity during the trip here to speak to Dr. Jack Lawson of Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans. And you were talking a little bit about these humpbacks being caught in ice. And I said, well, why don't they just dive down? He says, recently they've had quite a few blue whales that were caught in the ice and perished, and there's so few of them, they really thought, in the females, that it was just really very tragic. But you also worked on some whales doing something rather unique besides putting sunscreen on them. It was doing an EKG.
Right. Back a few years ago, and this fits in with the animals being caught in the cod trap. We had one caught in the cod trap, and I worked with a enthusiastic, I'll say, scientist from St. John's who did a lot of whale work, and he thought it might be fun to do an EKG on a whale. I convinced a big company from the States that it might be a good advertising thing to advertise you had the machine that did the first EKG on a whale. So they sent a couple of scientists from Texas, I believe, up here with a single lead EKG machine, and we stuck it onto the side of the whale when he came up. He was stuck in one place because he was in the trap, and when he came up for air, we stuck this lead onto him with a, looked like a toilet plunger, and got a EKG tracing off him. It was fun to do. I'm not sure how much we got out of it, because when we looked at the tracing, there was nothing to compare it against. Nobody had done it before.
But you were the first, so that's important.
As far as I know, we were the first, certainly the first to do it on a free-ranging whale, almost free.
Almost free-ranging.
Yeah.
In this area, it seems like you will have worked on animals from cats, dogs, horses, sheep. In your practice, you've done a little bit of all of it, so people maybe are used to reading books by James Herriot, and you've written your own book. Tell us a little bit about that book.
I have. I've always been interested in writing. It's something that I enjoy doing, and in a practice like mine, and I'm sure a lot of vets get this, people say to you, you should write a book someday. You know, you've done a lot of things. My practice is a little unusual. As you say, I've worked on animals like whales. I've also done work on polar bears and moose and caribou, dogs, cats, ostriches, horses, name it, and I've seen it.
Where do you find an ostrich up here in Newfoundland? Come on now.
Somebody decided that it would be a good idea to have an ostrich farm.
It work?
Probably the most intimidating animal I think I've ever worked with. You know, a 9-foot bird that looks at you with soulless eyes, and you know from 6 feet away he can tear you in half with a kick from his foot. But there were a couple of people in my area that tried ostrich and emu farming, and I had the opportunity to work with some of them.
just seems like in the middle of Newfoundland, it might just be a wee bit cold for these birds.
It's amazing. You know, you would think that, but they did well. There wasn't a problem with that. It wasn't a difficulty. I think the difficulty that they ran into was the marketing of it, you know, finding a market for products from the animals.
So tell us about some of the highlights in your books. I know there's chapters upon chapters of fabulous tales of things that you've done.
It's hard to pick. It's like, what's your favorite child? One interesting story is we have the Labrador Current flow by us here in Newfoundland. It's an ocean current that runs from the north. And icebergs come down from the north. And Bernie had the chance to have a bit of ice, as you were saying before. And sometimes there's a bear will hitch a ride on these. And polar bears, of course. And we had one polar bear that came down and came ashore in my area and went wandering around through rural Newfoundland, and the first place that it found that looked warm and interesting was a bingo parlor. The bear went into the bingo parlor, and everyone screamed when the bear came in, so it ran out. It was as scared, I think, as the people were, and jumped through the living room window of the next door house. And those people came up with a shotgun and chased the bear out of there, and eventually we had wildlife people go and tranquilize the bear, and I was brought in to examine it. We found out that the bear had broken off its canine teeth. And the next step was to try and find a dentist to do the fillings on the teeth. So we had a bit of an adventure with that bear.
And that's keeping that bear sedated for probably a fair length of time in order to find the dentist, to convince the dentist that, oh, by the way, I need you to do a root canal on a polar bear. It's like, uh-huh, what have you been drinking here in Newfoundland? Was it called Screech?
The anesthetics that we use in wild animals are quite amazing drugs. They're different than the ones that we use in domestic animals. And with this bear, we let him wake up between when we caught him and when we did any work on him. The thing that always amazes me with polar bears is they're held in traps that are basically culverts on wheels hauled behind trucks. And I know that these bears could claw their way through at any time they wanted to, but they seem to choose not to. An interesting thing with polar bears, when you have them in culvert traps, polar bears are one of the two animals in the world that people generally consider will preferentially hunt humans. The other one's the Bengal tiger. And when we have a polar bear in a culvert trap, we'll put a cloth over the edge. And the reason for that is we don't like them to see the people around because they may think this is a good place to come back to get something to eat.
Last night, my granddaughter, who is on this adventure with me, stayed in a small little bed and breakfast in Witless Bay, and it was called the Bear Cove Inn. And I thought it was really kind of cute because its image was actually two little polar bears going, well, polar bears aren't here in this part of Newfoundland, but I guess I'm totally wrong. So polar bears do come this far south.
They don't live here. They're not here for any length of time, but they will come down on ice. And most years, we will get, well, I would say every year, we get a few polar bears on the island that come. And generally what happens is the wildlife officials will tranquilize them, and then they'll fly them back up north where they're happier and we're happier.
So polar bears in your backyard. And speaking of your backyard, you said that there is this island that's Maiden Island.
That's right.
It's a stone's throw if you're really good at throwing stones from your backyard. And you said you were diving there with your daughter. Now, this water is freezy buttons cold. Excuse me. I've stuck my toe in it, and it's very cold. But you dive out there.
Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. You want lots of thick neoprene or a dry suit if you're going to be diving in this water.
And what did you say you found out there off the island?
Well, the interesting thing in that dive for us is we have an animal called a wolffish. It's a very ugly, big-headed fish with its teeth angled backwards. And the fishermen here always talk about if you get one in your nets, you don't want them to bite you because you can't pull your hand out because it'll rip you up because of the angle of their teeth. And I'd seen many of them diving, sitting on the bottom, and they usually rear up and kind of snarl at you a bit. I suppose that's what they're doing. And I was on a dive with my daughter around this island, and we came across five of them coming towards us through the water. They didn't bother us, but it was a little intimidating.
I was very surprised yesterday at Perry Bay.
I'm not sure which.
There is a
Cove of Bay, Petty Bay.
Petty Harbor.
Okay. Ah, it was close. Started close. With a P. Petty Harbor. They had a small mini aquarium there. And in the small aquarium, they had several sea cucumbers and some other fish and jellyfish that we saw yesterday as I was going out looking at whales that were extremely bright in color. And would never expect it, bright-colored fish or sea life in this area. I just very incorrectly thought that it all be very pale. What have you seen when you've been out there diving?
Well, you see the sea cucumbers and sea urchins, and there's all kinds of shellfish and things like that. There's lobsters here, too. The interesting thing in Newfoundland is how few of the things, the odd things out of the ocean that people eat here. We eat the lobsters. I don't know. The first person that ate one of them must have been very brave. But the sea cucumbers and sea urchins and things like that, there's a big market for them for Asian cuisine, but nobody locally eats any of that at all. Or even the shells, a lot of the shellfish people don't eat.
Some cultures definitely eat different things that we don't eat. Cultural differences. You're working here, Dr. Peacock. I'm sure that you found some of the local people have different ideas towards animals. What have you seen that might be a little bit unusual that maybe people in Ontario might not have thought of?
There's a lot of things different with animals here. The first thing that I found out when I started practicing is the language is different. There's all kinds. I didn't know what an elder or the lights or, parts of animals like that were. I'd never heard of them before.
Lights. Ooh, elders?
An elder is an udder. Huh. And the lights are the lungs.
Oh, I thought that's eyes. Okay, there we go.
Had to learn a few of those terms. The other thing that happens here in my practice, a lot of the, I practice largely large animal, and a lot of the people with sheep and cattle would keep the animals on their property in a barn during the winter, and in the summer, depending on where you lived, how remote it was, they would either go to a community pasture, and in some areas, they were even just let run free. And they were interesting animals to look at as far as health. If somebody's got a sick sheep or something that's running around over hundreds of square miles.
And how do you find it? Now, I came in today greeted by just a gorgeous six-month-old Australian Shepherd. And what was looking at this Australian Shepherd going, something's different about this Aussie. What is it? It's friendly. Oh, I know. It has a tail.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, an interesting thing in Newfoundland, we, for a long, long time, I believe since the mid-70s, it's been illegal to cut ears on dogs, to dock ears, and tail docking is also illegal in the province. Since the last 2 to 3 years, it's been illegal to dock a dog's tail. So we like to think we're progressive there.
Well, very progressive. I know more and more communities are trying to get away from it. Being from Southern California, we can't declaw cats. Certain communities, it is totally illegal to do so. You've seen just a myriad of animals, great different experiences. What's probably one of the, you look back going, oh my goodness, how did I survive that one? You know, veterinarians will sometimes get themselves in rather sticky situations where maybe you shouldn't have survived that one.
Sometimes you run into things that you don't think are a big deal at the time, and then when you look back on it later, you think, what was I thinking? I had a bull one time that I had to put an antiparasitical on his back, and he looked very quiet, and he was in a pen, and I thought, well, I'll just jump over the side and pour this along his back. And I jumped in with the bull, and when I got out, very helpfully, the farmer said to me, boy, you had a lot of nerve getting in with him. And I said, well, he was quiet. And he said, yeah, he killed somebody, 2 weeks ago. And he had been bought from another farm, and the reason they'd sold him is that he had he was tied somewhere, and he came forward and crushed a guy against the wall. So it didn't, at the time, didn't seem like a big deal, but it was, when you look at it after you hear the story, it's a little intimidating.
So sometimes it's better not to know ahead of time what you're getting into. It's just like, huh, won't be doing that one again.
Right.
Now, your wife, you mentioned, and she's awesome, Ingrid, is an MD. So together, have you had to do any joint medical interventions?
She's helped me from time to time. I can remember we had a horse one time with a hernia, and I used a fairly short-acting anesthetic on the horse, and I wasn't happy that I could do the surgery fast enough by myself. She came out with me on the call, and the two of us started from opposite ends of the wound and put it together. So she was a big help in that one.
And you also had three children that grew right. up in this wonderful home. And you said at one time, if people could see through your back window, there's this sloping lawn that goes down to, what, a 30-foot cliff, and then it just falls into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You've had some experiences with the children all of a sudden, oops, slipping into the ocean. But I know you had it very well protected, so no child cruelty. You had fences up. But what was the situation there?
The weather here is odd. We get a winter, but it's sort of intermittent. It'll snow, and then it'll rain, and then the snow will all go. And then what happens sometimes here is it'll snow, and it'll rain, and the rain will freeze on top of the snow. And we had one time like that, and as Bernadine said, our backyard slopes off to the ocean. And we had a fence to keep the kids from falling over the 30-foot cliff down into the ocean, and one piece blew down in a storm. My wife came home, and one of the kids jumped out and slipped all the way down the backyard and out over the cliff. And she was a little worried what had happened to her, of course. And
just
hit,
a wee bit.
Hit the one piece of snow down, missed the ocean by probably 10 feet, and hit the one piece of snow with all the rocks around, and she was fine. So.
And your children, did they ever go with you on calls? Because I imagine there were some great experiences for them to see. This is my dad, the veterinarian.
Yeah, they did. And you can tell what a great job it is that none of them ended up being vets.
But you said one's in medical school.
One of them's in medical school, yeah. Yeah, and I think they were a big help. And I can remember one time with one of my daughters I took with me on a call. It was kind of funny. We were looking at horses on a pasture, and the pasture manager came along wondering who was on his pasture, and then realized it was the vet, and that was okay. And it was intimidating when we came to the place, because the horses all ran around the truck and were jamming us up against the truck and kicking each other and everything, and I was a little worried about my daughter. And we looked over the side, and the horses were all had a plastic bag that they were shaking around, and the pasture manager started cursing and complaining about these stupid people coming to the pasture, leaving plastic bags around, and these poor horses were going to choke on it, and it might be work for the vet even, you know, if they choked on a bag. And when we finished up and drove away, my daughter said to me, that guy didn't see, but his window was down, and one of the horses reached into his truck and pulled his lunch out. And that was his lunch bag.
These are smart horses. Yeah, it's a little too smart. And you also said besides sometimes taking out your wife or taking out one of your daughters for a veterinary assistant, you also take your Aussies. Your Aussies have gone out with you.
Yeah, they're a big help. I wish I could have taught them to let people into the truck to help me get drugs. The one problem with them, they'd get defensive and wouldn't let anybody come in to remove any drugs from the truck. But there was a couple of things they were good at. One thing they were good at, of course, was chasing. Sometimes they thought they were better than they were. But the other thing that I found they were really good with downer cows. In cows, there's a syndrome where cows will get down and they give up. And they just say, I'm going to die. There's nothing I can do. And there may not be very much wrong with the cow even. And I found that a lot of these cows, especially if they weren't used to a dog, if you could take your dog and get your dog to run at them and snarl and look like he was going to eat them from about 50 yards away, by the time the dog got to them, the cow would get up. And you'd have animals that you could prod with, you know, all kinds of ways, poking at them and everything. They wouldn't get up, but if they had a fierce-looking dog run at them, they would get up. And the dog would never touch them. But he and she, two of them that I had, were very good at looking very mean when they ran at the cattle. And so they were one of my tools for...
So instead of having doing testing, this was your lab test.
That's
you
right.
Use labs.
That's right.
I know that's a very bad joke.
It wasn't
very
a cat scan. It was a dog scan.
It was a dog scan. Very bad. Yes. And you typically have had Australian shepherds.
Yeah, I've had three Australian shepherds, and they're a handful. They're a handful. They're bright dogs, but they take a lot of work. But one of the things I love about these dogs is that they just love learning things. You know, anything that you can teach them, you can just see their eyes light up when you try to teach them something. And they were wonderful. My practice had a lot of driving. I had drives 2-3 hours sometimes when I was looking after the next practice to a call. And it was good company having a dog in the truck. And very nice. They'd on the way back, they'd cuddle up and stick their head in your lap driving home. That was always nice.
Keep you warm, keep you awake.
Yeah.
So Dr. Peacock, you're talking about here's a practice where you're having to travel 3 hours to go see a client. Talking from just a very, you know, the economics of running a practice, How does a veterinarian run a practice when you have to go 3 hours one way? That means 3 hours back. That's your day on the road.
Yeah, it's kind of the cause and the effect both at the same time. All of the large animal practice in Newfoundland is run by the government. And the reason it is run by the government is because of these distances. I have not intensive but extensive practice. There are farms dotted all over the place but not close together. And it's a practice that would be impossible to look after, I think, private. You couldn't afford to do it. Government has decided to subsidize this, and I was always on salary in my practice, as are the other large animal vets in the province. And I believe that socially, for sure, and perhaps even economically, it makes sense. It allows these farming centers to work. It allows them to have veterinary assistance that's a big help to a lot of them. Some of the even dairy farms are miles and miles from anywhere else. It would be very difficult to be able to have a veterinarian privately come and look after these places, but with a bit of government assistance in setting up the system, it does work.
With the government being involved, oftentimes people are concerned, but it seems as though sometimes government is one of the best ones for making sure that the people are healthy, the animals are healthy, that we're all interrelated. How have you seen your role as a veterinarian here in very rural Newfoundland kind of affecting people and animals?
One of the things that it does in some of these small communities, historically the animals were the center of these communities and really the reason why they were where they are. If there's no animals there, there's not as much reason for these people to not move into the city. You know, there's one big city in on the island of Newfoundland, St. John's. And you could argue about, well, if there's no economic reason for these places to exist, maybe they shouldn't exist, but there's something sad about that kind of thinking, I think. You know, there's a real social value to it and cultural value to these places surviving.
When I walked into your home, I was impressed with the fact that there's a warmth to it, there's history, there's music everywhere. And then your wife Ingrid was kind enough to show us that this was a older home that you very lovingly have restored and refurbished. Tell me a little bit about your background with the music and rebuilding this home, because that's just a whole part of people that about being a veterinarian that oftentimes people don't appreciate.
Well, I'll tell you about the music part first. I guess my approach to music is in some ways a little bit like my approach to veterinary medicine. I'm as far from a specialist as you can be. You know, I see large animals and small animals. I see wildlife. I do surgery. I think sometimes a big part of my job is being a psychiatrist for my clients. I really have done everything. And the expense of that is sometimes someone who is, for example, a dog surgeon is certainly better at dog surgery than I am. They're a specialist. And my approach to music has always been kind of like that. I always tell people I try to play as many instruments as poorly as possible. So the family is, everybody's always played, and we play all kinds of different things. And when the kids were small, we played as a band, and we've always enjoyed music. And I think it's important for all of us as veterinarians that there's more to your life than just looking after animals. And I really believe that that helps in your vet medicine, too, you know, that you're somehow a little bit more balanced if you live a life like that.
When I was first interested in getting into veterinary medicine, I was told by a veterinary mentor, work hard, play hard, because otherwise life is just going to be way too boring and way too short.
Yeah, it's certainly not boring, is it?
No. And the work that you've done in this house, tell me a little bit about when you moved into this house. I think you said it was a bit on the mature side.
Yeah, when we moved here, we were staying in a larger community. The village that we live in Freshwater has about 80 houses in it, little fishing village. And the first time we walked into the place, our breaths were just taken away with the beauty of this place. It's a wonderful place. And we found an old house that nobody had lived in for, I guess it would be 25 years at the time. And my wife, more than I, convinced the guy who owned it eventually. I think she just wore him down, convinced him to sell it to us. And we gradually, over the years, have built it up. And it's a place right on the ocean. When we first moved here, naively, we thought, oh, we'll live on the ocean. And we didn't realize that everybody likes to live on the ocean. Houses aren't necessarily available that close into the water. So we've been lucky with that.
With some tenacity, you got a great piece of property. Mm. Dr. Peacock, you mentioned, you know, being on this great piece of property and looking out, and I'm seeing various seabirds. You said you'd worked on different types of wildlife. What have you worked on besides the whale?
There is a nature park in Newfoundland called Salmonier Nature Park, and I was a veterinarian for Salmonier for a long time. So I've done quite a bit of work with birds. I've done orthopedic surgery on one of the ones we get a lot of times are snowy owls. Come from the north, and a lot of them seem to hit power lines and things like that. We've patched up a lot of them. I've done a little bit of work with birds like gannets. This is a seabird that we have up here with a 6-foot wingspan. They're a little harder to work with. They don't handle people touching them very well. Done some duck work. Done quite a bit of work with moose and caribou. Kind of a thing that has got to be sort of one of the things I've specialized in, I suppose, if I specialize in anything a little bit, is tranquilizing wild animals. And I do some teaching of darting moose and caribou from helicopters. So that's another thing we've worked at.
So hanging outside of helicopters with your high-powered scoped rifle and getting them in the bum.
Actually, you do it with a pistol.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And you do hang out the window. And you find out, as a vet, very fast that you're not the best one to be shooting. You want somebody who knows what they're doing with a gun. And you want a very good helicopter pilot. We were doing a translocation of caribou where the caribou were being shot with tranquilizer guns, landed near where they were being shot, and then driven in vehicles about 40 minutes to their new home. And I was in the back of the truck watching the caribou, these tranquilized caribou, making sure they were okay during the trip. We started off with pickup trucks. It was in the middle of the winter, and I made the mistake of telling the driver, let's see how fast you can get to where we're going to drop these
That's
caribou.
That's called windshield factors.
Yeah. It was freezing cold, and I was seriously worried whether I was going to be flipped out the back, you know, hanging onto a spare tire and trying to examine a caribou. After the first day of this, we had a meeting, and I said, no more of this, let's do it in vans. So we changed over to vans the second day. And the second day, we were moving one caribou along, and over the radio came a message that someone in one of the helicopters had hit a caribou in the chest rather than the hips. We tried to hit them in large muscle masses in the back legs. And they hit one in the chest, and that's not a good place for a dart to go. Of course, there's all kinds of bad things, hearts and lungs and things that you don't want tranquilizer into. And you don't want holes in that area. So the decision was made by the helicopter pilots and the biologists in the helicopter to try and find a veterinarian fast. So they drove over the town of Bay Roberts, which is a place of about 4,000 or 5,000 people. So a fair-sized little town. And they found us driving through Bay Roberts with our van and radioed us. And we pulled off the side of the road and the helicopter landed in a front yard. Two wildlife workers jumped out of the helicopter with a caribou on a stretcher, ran out to the road, threw it in the back of our van, ran back, jumped into the helicopter and took off. And my last memory of that was looking at the house and seeing these two women looking out their window, wondering what was going on with the helicopter.
Did I just see that? No, it must have been the screech that
yeah,
caused that.
Yeah. Helicopter landing in their front yard, yeah.
Oh, great story. Thank you.
I could sit and listen to Dr. Peacock and his stories about practicing veterinary medicine in Newfoundland for hours. Oh, yes, I did. But now we need to take a break. So don't stray. More adventures when we return.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Hey there, pet parents! This is Christy Vaughn, host of The Doggy Dish. Do you love your furry companion? Do you love making him or her healthy treats but can't seem to find the time? Great news! The Doggy Dish is the perfect show for you. Every episode is chock full of healthy and easy recipes that are made with ingredients you most likely have on hand. Tune into The Doggy Dish for yummy and healthy recipes for your canine kids.
Every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
It's a little bit like when you see these people doing jumps in the Olympics on skis. You wonder, how did you ever learn that in the first place? When I first started working here, one of the wildlife biologists asked me, would you be interested in coming along on a trip? And I didn't think that was a very difficult question. Do you want to go along in a helicopter to look at caribou? And really what it came down to was just showing some interest. And then you gradually work your way along and find out after years of this, maybe you know something about it. And it's exciting work, and it's important that it's done for the right reasons. You know, there are reasons that you would want to, you know, scientific reasons for analyzing movement of the animals and stuff like that. We sometimes put collars on them. There are a few times we've done things where there are areas in the province that are appropriate for caribou and there's none there, and we move some there. So we dart them and then move them to a new place.
What I found interesting today is I learned that moose are not indigenous to this area.
No, it's interesting. We have all kinds of moose, and there's people who believe we have too many moose, but there's a number of people die every year in Newfoundland from hitting moose in their cars. But the original, I got to be careful with the number because I'm not sure what it is, but the moose herd in Newfoundland comes from, I think it's four or five animals that were brought in a couple of hundred years ago, and that's it. And they all come from those original few moose.
A little bit of inbreeding there.
Well, I'm always amazed, you know, when we talk about animals at risk and populations at risk, there's numbers that people talk about. When you get down to a certain number, a group won't survive mm-hmm. because there's not broad enough genetics. And then you see something like this and you wonder, well, how do they do so well with such a narrow genetic base? I'm not sure how that works.
But somehow the moose have survived.
Yeah, they've done very well. They've done very well.
Of all the animals that you've worked on over the years, is there one that really stands out in your mind, like the most memorable case that you've had?
No. Is that a good answer?
Okay.
I can't think of anything as any individual case. No, I'm sorry.
So the most deadly that you didn't know about till afterwards was that bull that didn't slam you against the fencing and kill you. Anything else that comes to mind as to the craziest situation that you ever got yourself into?
Well, I was telling the story about working with the whale and doing the EKG. The size of them is just so mind-boggling. You get out in a little Zodiac, a Zodiac with three people, and the Zodiac's about 8 feet long, and the scientist hands you a snorkel and a mask and says, stick your head in the water and have a look at that down there. And the first time I did it, I looked down and I saw this white thing and I thought, boy, he's a long piece down. And it took me a couple of minutes to realize that wasn't the whale, it was the flipper on the whale. It was just his pectoral fin. And then you turn your head to one side and as far as you can see under the water, there's whale. And you look to the other side and as far as you can see, there's whale. And I always thought bulls were big. I deal with animals that would be a ton or ton and a half, and these are big animals. And then you're dealing with this animal that eats that much every day, you know, eats the weight of a bull every day in plankton, and you just feel so small next to these guys. And when we were working on the humpback whale, the scientist said to us, now be careful, if he gets angry at us, lie down in the boat because he may take a swat at us.
Really? Oh my goodness. And they're going after you with their fins?
And what they do is they will swat you with their tail. And he said it's a little bit like as if somebody took their arm and put their hand up beside their ear on the far side, like they were going to hit you. And he said if they flex their tail, it's that kind of winding up to hit you. And he said, if you see him flex his tail while we're working on him, lie down in the boat. We had a scientist with us in the boat that was working on the EKG, and he wasn't very impressed by that.
He didn't believe it?
His next line was, get me out of here.
I see, that's kind of not impressed with this. Okay, great idea. No, I didn't sign up to be killed.
Yeah.
Any other animal that just really stands out? So, I mean, you've had a tremendous cross-section of different animals you've worked with.
Yeah.
Any people?
The people here are great. I just love the people here. And they're funny. When I first came here, I almost needed a translator. I know my wife worked in the hospital. She was lucky enough to have nurses working with her. And from some of the communities in Newfoundland all speak slightly different dialect. And there were people that came in that my wife would have a nurse translate for so that she'd know what they were saying. And it's interesting. There's a real Irish lilt to a lot of the accents in Newfoundland. And after I was here for quite a few years, one of my proudest moments, I have to say, was I had a friend who was a Newfoundlander who I took to one of the remote areas in my practice. And a local guy with a very thick accent was telling me about his horse. And my friend, who was another part of the province, when we got back in the truck, said, "I didn't understand a word that guy said." And I thought, I've arrived. I understand Newfoundlanders better than some Newfoundlanders. But I was saying about the Irish influence of it. We went for a visit one time. My wife and I took a holiday in Ireland, and we were in a little village in rural Ireland talking to a farmer. And after talking for a while, he said, "Where are you from?" And we told him we're from Canada. And he said, "And you understand everything I say, do you?" I said, "You sound just like the guys at home. You're no different at all." And he said that tourists from North America generally couldn't understand. So it was interesting.
I think I read someplace that St. John's is closer to Dublin than it is to Toronto.
That's probably true.
And yeah. Seeing the influence as I was going up and down the streets in St. John's, yeah. You know, the Irish music and the right. Irish pubs, and there's lots of Newcastle beer everywhere. So
there's a place in my practice called the Cape Shore that's very Irish, and it's a wonderful place. I love it down there. And there are stories of television crews coming from Ireland to do stories about traditions in the Cape Shore that have been lost in Ireland. They have very old ideas there that they don't do anymore in Ireland. One of the things in the Cape Shore, when I go into people's houses, when I used to go on calls, I go into people's houses, they were very concerned that if you went into the house, you came out the same door you went in. It was considered very bad luck to go out a different door than you came into the house.
Fascinating.
The other thing that I haven't been lucky enough to go into any of them, but some of my friends that I've worked with have been to wakes, Irish wakes, and they're pretty wild affairs. Put the coffin out on a table in the kitchen and dance around with one glass of beer on the coffin. And that's a fine place for a coffin until it gets too crowded. Then you take the table out and lean the coffin up against the wall.
And screech. What is screech?
Screech is originally the idea of screech is it was rum. There was a market where rum came back from Jamaica in return for dried fish. Cod would be dried and shipped down to Jamaica, and rum would come back.
In the same casks?
Could be. Oh. No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay, good. That would have been too disgusting.
But when the rum was used up, the barrels were available for anybody that wanted to use them, and you put water in the barrels and swish it around inside, and what was left is screech.
Yum.
So, that's high quality stuff, that is.
So, Dr. Peacock, why would somebody want to come to Newfoundland in a half hour or less? Why would somebody want to come to Newfoundland?
I think a better question is, why wouldn't anybody want to come to Newfoundland? It's a wonderful place. It's a culture really unlike anything else in North America. The people here are incredibly friendly. Bernadine and I were talking earlier, and she was mentioning about when you walk in the streets in the city, if you go to cross the road, people stop. People won't, if somebody's driving the car, they'll stop and motion for you to go across.
Even if you're trying to jaywalk, they'll stop.
Well, and sometimes they want you to cross, even if you're just standing there, they want you to go across. So the people are incredibly friendly. The place has a beauty it's pretty stark. It's not a lush place of growth of trees and stuff like that, but the rocks here are just wonderful. The weather could be better. You've got nice weather while you're visiting this week, but we get some nasty weather sometimes. But it's mostly the people, really. It's just wonderful people here. Enough to keep me here for 30 years when I plan to come for two.
Well, Dr. Peacock, thank you so much. It was a great interview. I love it. And the name of your book so people can pick it up?
Creatures of the Rock. It's coming out November the 18th this year, and I hope you like it if you do pick it up.
It's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much. Again, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. You've been listening to Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.